This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Beginning this weekend in East Central Illinois, visitors to the Vermilion County Museum can experience an exhibit on art that tells a much broader story than that of Danville and its people. It's called The Auschwitz Experience in the Art of Prisoners. It has 24 poster panels featuring images of dozens of drawings and paintings made by artists who survived the notorious Nazi concentration camp. The original artwork is at the Auschwitz-Birkenau State Museum in Poland, which loaned the images to the Illinois event sponsor, the Holocaust Education Center of the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation. The exhibit formally opens with a presentation this Sunday afternoon and runs through the end of March. Later this spring, it'll make stops at the Danville Area Community College and the Illini Hillel in Champaign, and the organizers hope it finds additional audiences in the coming years. Last week, I drove to Danville to visit the Vermilion County Museum and meet with the organizers of the exhibit.
Brian Mackey?
That's me.
No.
Are you Brian?
Brian Kahn.
Nice to meet you.
Brian Mackey, Bob Lehman.
Okay.
This whole thing is his brainchild from the beginning.
Brian Kahn is a retired teacher from the Urbana Schools and a retired education professor from the University of Illinois Springfield. Bob Lehman teaches social studies at Westville High School, south of Danville, including a half-year class called Holocaust and Genocide Studies. He's been trained by the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum and is also working toward a Ph.D. in the subject. We spoke on the second floor, where the panels are laid out next to a diorama of Abraham Lincoln's local office from the days when he was a traveling lawyer. A quick note that if I sound a little muffled, it's because I was wearing a mask. I began by asking Bob to give a brief overview of Auschwitz and its role in the Holocaust.
Auschwitz was the largest labor and extermination camp within the Nazi concentration camp system. Historically, about 1.3 million people were deported to Auschwitz. About 1.1 million people died in Auschwitz. From a variety of different backgrounds. There's 14 different countries from where the inmates came from, to include Soviet prisoners of war, Poles, Germans, Czechs, Slavs, Romans, Sinti. So it covers basically all of occupied Europe. They had four crematoria gas chamber permanent installations that were built. Auschwitz sort of symbolizes the camp system, even though it wasn't built until 1940, and it didn't begin killing people until 1941, 1942.
How many people were murdered there?
Depends on what source that you want to read. The museum is saying 1.1 million, but I think they're kind of on the low side. I would say it's somewhere between 1.1 and 2, but that's just my feeling.
And hundreds of thousands of those were children. In fact, children were often the first to enter the gas chambers when they got off the trains. But again, it's known as the major killing center, of which there were six in the region of the general government, which was Poland, which the Nazis took in 1939, at the very beginning of the war, and that's where the camps were all established. But there were hundreds and hundreds of other camps all over Europe, not death camps, but labor camps and other forms of political prisoner camps. And in every country that they conquered, there were camps. But this is Auschwitz. That's the one, as Bob said, people know. It's almost symbolic. It's almost interchangeable with the word Holocaust.
So this exhibit is art from survivors. How many people survived Auschwitz?
I don't think there's any real good number. What we know is that when Auschwitz was liberated on January 27, 1945 by the Soviet Army, there was 7,000 people left alive in the camp. But prior to that, they were doing death marches away from the camp. So you have thousands of people that survived from that. I don't think there's any real known number of the number of survivors from Auschwitz.
So maybe we can walk over and take a look at some of the art. What strikes you most when you looked at these works?
What strikes me most is, and the reason why we selected this, is because it is art of survivors, and because this one traces an inmate's, a person's experience from arrival all the way through. So it starts with arrival at the camp, and you see the railroad cars, you see them being forced off of the pandemonium that exists when they're coming off of it. And then the very next panel is transformation into a prisoner. You see the ones that were selected to live, you see the process that they had to go through. So it just traces the whole thing. And some of that, you know, some of the artists like Jan Komsky, who I really like, he gets into really good, vivid detail, whether it's in a pen and ink drawing, such as the title of the one Job for Men in the Women's Camp, or a colored one. Okay, for example, in Komsky's work, Tattooing the Numbers in the Prisons Camp, what you see is you see a line of women who've just arrived in the camp, newly dressed in their blue and white striped prison uniform dress, receiving the tattoo on their left arm. Now, Auschwitz was the only camp that did the tattoos. So if you've ever come across a survivor with a tattoo on their arm, more than likely they were in Auschwitz. You can see some of the despair and the depression that's setting in with the women in that picture getting that tattoo.
I think one of the most striking things to me is that when you think about war, when you think about the Second World War, when you think about Auschwitz, you know, the first thought is not art and culture. You know, it's death and destruction. And yet, when you see these, you realize that so many people came from so many different corners of Poland, the intelligentsia, artists, and they lived here. They did. They lived, they died. Many of them lived and survived and did their art in the camp. They would smuggle materials. They would get, you know, pencils or something to draw with. So it's like it's another world, and yet in this world of death and destruction and people being gassed, there's people who are carrying on.
We're listening to my conversation recorded last week on the exhibit The Auschwitz Experience and the Art of Prisoners. It runs through the end of the month at the Vermilion County Museum. That's where I spoke with Bob Lehman and Brian Kahn. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st. Do stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening to my conversation with Bob Lehman and Brian Kahn, who together worked to bring an exhibit on art from the Holocaust to Illinois. The Auschwitz Experience and the Art of Prisoners consists of a series of poster panels featuring images of drawings and paintings made by artists who survived the Nazi slave labor and death camp. I spoke with him last week at the Vermilion County Museum, which is where the exhibit is on display through the end of the month. It has other stops planned in Danville and Champaign later this spring, and they hope to go beyond that in the near future. Before the break, Lehman and Kahn were talking about some of the works they found particularly striking. Lehman says the stories of the artists themselves are interesting in their own right.
One of the artists, his story is just so fascinating, and that's Jan Komsky. Jan Komsky was first arrested in 1940. He was trying to escape Poland to go to Slovakia and France, and he was arrested by the Gestapo. He was thrown in prison, and he was among some of the first prisoners that were taken to Auschwitz in 1940. And after about a year and a half, he managed to escape. He actually escaped Auschwitz, and then About 9 months later, he was rearrested by the Gestapo and sent back to Auschwitz, and he went in under an assumed name, because if he had given him his real name, then he would have faced punishment and execution for being an escapee. So he was returned back to Auschwitz under an assumed name, went to a different part of the camp where people were unlikely to recognize him, and he managed to survive both times incarcerated in Auschwitz. And he has probably most of the work that is here. I think he's got 8 to 10 pieces within the exhibit. These two are examples of his. And I talked about him before, doing the pen and ink, and then the color. I think his work is some of the most vivid work that comes through. But I just wanted to highlight Jam Komsky. I mean, his story is just phenomenal.
And these questions keep bringing up more. Just to add to that, in reading about Jan Komsky, so much of the artwork by these people, a lot of it was done by order of Gestapo. They found out, they had people draw pictures of their relatives. They would bring them photographs, and they'd have them draw something, they'd have them carve something, they'd have them make signs for the camp, and often maybe they got an extra ration of something, but you know, it's like they had to, you know, so much of the work was done for personal use by Gestapo officers, including the commandants.
So what, how did this exhibit come about?
Well, I was sitting there during COVID when we were locked down, and I was doing some things for my Holocaust class, and I was looking for online activities, and so I got on the Auschwitz Museum's website, and I saw where they had traveling exhibitions, and I looked at this one. From what I saw, it looked interesting, so I emailed Brian, and I said, we need to do this. We need to look into it. Well, we started looking into it, but then COVID came, and so we pushed it off until this summer. And we had a couple email conversations with the museum in Poland, and they told us what the requirements were. Well, this summer, Brian picked it up again and said, we're going to do it. And we originally were going to premiere it at the Hillel Center of the U of I on January 27th, the International Holocaust Remembrance Day, but then COVID resurged, and so we put it off, and so it's premiering here in Danville on March 6th at the Vermilion County Museum, and it will have its Champagne debut on April 27th, which is Yom HaShoah, the Israeli remembrance of the Holocaust.
And this is the first time that this exhibit has been shown outside of Europe as a presentation this way.
So some of the work is very detailed and lifelike. You can see the gaunt faces and the cold. You can feel the cold. Some of it's more impressionistic, right? This reminds me of the Munch Scream painting a little bit. Can you talk about your reaction to this?
I think each survivor that painted had their own distinct artistic styles. So like the one that you're talking about before, the selection by Helena, and I'm going to mess the name up, Olamaka, she may be more of this, you know, the abstract type, but it's still very meaningful because it's showing all of the, this group of prisoners with that scream-like face awaiting a selection, whether or not they're going to live and they're going to die. So you can see, you know, you can almost get the horror and the terror, because they know if they're not selected to live that they're going to the crematory, they're going to the gas chamber. So these emotions can come out through, whether it's in traditional artistic work or in a more abstract way.
And when you look at the dates on these images, some were painted immediately after the war in 46. Other people painted later. This is 1965. So it makes you think about the impressions that these people took out of the camp, what they had to deal with after the war was over. It wasn't just go home and set up shop again. There was no home. You know, Poland was in ruins. So Think about how long maybe they spent in displaced persons camps. Think how long they were just trying to get their strength back enough and get back involved in the artistic life. And many did. Many returned to painting. Many returned to Poland and tried to recreate their lives there. Some immigrated to the United States. There's a gentleman on the other side who immigrated to the U.S. And was an illustrator for the Washington Post until 2002. So once people survived the war and got back on with their lives, however long that took, I just think of how the painting must have, and the images must have, there was a time for them when it was right to put it on paper. How much did they remember? How many sketches had they made before and smuggled out? And how much just came from memory, from pure memory?
And the other thing would be is that some of the artists in their biographies said that they basically did it as a form of therapy for them to reconcile what they went through and to get on with their life. They had to get these images out. They had to get this artwork down so that they could move on with their life and not forget the camp and their experience in the camp, but come to terms with it.
So we're at a time of, sadly, rising anti-Semitism, or at least anti-Semitism is not behind us in history. What do you hope people take away from this experience?
I would like to think that that in some way, everything that's going on today, whether it be issues with Russia and the Ukraine, whether it be issues with anti-Semitism, a rise in anti-Semitism all over the world, maybe there can be another resurgence of education, of bringing this information to children in schools in a meaningful and pedagogically sound way. That drive was there back in the 90s with the museum in D.C. and Schindler's List and all these documentaries that won Best Picture by Spielberg. It was thriving. Today, you know, other things have taken its place. Standards, COVID. We're not seeing the same enthusiasm, I think, as we did, you know, 20, 25 years ago. Maybe something like this, maybe more linking to the past for a lot of people and for kids, can help them better understand what happened then and to see that, you know, this was not the only genocide. You know, the mandate in Illinois started in 1990-91, the first state to mandate teaching the Holocaust. In 2006, they changed it to include all genocides, contemporary genocides. If teachers have a hard time understanding how to teach the Holocaust, how are they going to understand how to teach comparative genocides? We need to do more because the world depends on it. The world depends on people understanding hate, discrimination, prejudice, and how to combat it, and not how to be a bystander, but how to be an activist and how to stand up for it. So there is hope, and I think even art can bring that hope.
And I think one of the points for this exhibit is that it shows in artistic detail what can arise when fanaticism, hate, prejudice, intolerance for the other goes unchecked. Because when it goes unchecked, then you have things like Auschwitz and the Holocaust. You have things like Rwanda. You have things like Bosnia, the Armenian genocide, and the genocide that's going on in China right now, which, you know, one of the key takeaway phrases from a study of the Holocaust is never forget, never again. Well, if we really meant never forget, never again, then the world would be up in arms over these genocides that have gone on since the Holocaust ended. The genocide, the famine, the starvation in the Sudan is still going on, and it's been going on since 2000. And it's faded from memory, but it's still ongoing. And we haven't done anything to correct that. We haven't done anything, really, no world pressure to stop the genocide in China. It's sort of being, you know, hidden from sight.
In Syria.
In Syria. So it's all over. So if we really mean never again and never forget, then we need to take the lessons from this and put pressure on the policymakers and say, you know, we need to stop this. We need to stand up and take our position on the world stage and say, this is wrong. This should be stopped. And until we do that, those are just empty words and empty phrases.
And I think, too, it helps students better understand that when and even adults, you know, who are out of school, when you think about genocide, when you think about Auschwitz, you know, certain images come to mind. But certainly, for most people, art and music and thriving and spiritual resistance doesn't come to mind. This is a whole different world. We could have had an exhibit of photographs from the liberation and what that looked like. Why? We've seen it. We don't want to show that to students all the time. It's not sound. It's not going to help. But here we're seeing life that was going on inside the camp, although horrific in some ways and in many ways, but how it branched off and came out of when people came out of the war, when people came out of the camp, that we can now look at it and think it was more than just a death camp. This was a place where people were living and gathering ideas, even in the worst of times, and what they did with it afterwards. And isn't that so important, that it's not just what happens at the moment, but what you do with it decades down the line and how you learn from it?
Well, thank you for being with us on the 21st show. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome.
And thank you so much, Brian.
Brian Kahn is a retired teacher from both Urbana Schools and the University of Illinois Springfield. Bob Lehman teaches social studies at Westville High School, south of Danville, including a course on Holocaust and genocide studies. Together, they brought the exhibit to Illinois, to America, really, from the Auschwitz-Birkenau State Museum in Poland, under the auspices of the Holocaust Education Center at the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation. The Auschwitz Experience in the Art of Prisoners formally opens this Sunday afternoon and runs through the end of March. Later this spring, it'll make stops at Danville Area Community College and Illini Hillel in Champaign. And the organizers hope it can find additional audiences after that. That's it for today. Before we go, I do want to urge you to join our texting group. You can send the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Then you can weigh in on issues in the news, help inform our coverage. Again, send the word TALK to 217-803-0730. You can find information about that on our website, which is 21stshow.org. That's 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can find links to our Twitter page, our email address, our voicemail line, all the different ways to contact us. You can also find a link to subscribe to our podcasts. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, NPR One. Just search for The 21st. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey, Aiden Choate, and Erica Scalise, who is also our engagement producer. Our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.